This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is Politically Speaking.
In the final week of the regular legislative session, Missouri lawmakers failed to pass a bill that was the state's plan to keep the Kansas City Chiefs and Royals in Missouri. However, 2 weeks later, lawmakers were back in Jefferson City, with one of the main reasons being getting that bill across the finish line, a goal that they accomplished. On this episode of Politically Speaking, House Minority Leader Ashley Aani joins the show. Aani, whose district includes a part of Kansas City, talks about the importance of keeping the teams in Missouri. She also discusses what she expects in the next legislative session. Let's hit the music.
This is the Politically Speaking podcast, the definitive show about Missouri politics.
Let's go back to some of those policies, to that peace and prosperity that we had some 4 to 5 years ago.
Everywhere is Democratic country once this Democrat's been there.
There are a lot of things in Washington that are very bipartisan, including some bills that I've already gotten passed.
And I think it works best when you can see both sides, but you have to pick one, and I firmly align with the Republicans.
But certainly, I think if she's running against one of the crazy dudes, certainly it's going to be a lot easier.
But I'll take wisdom and age and a few missteps in oratory over somebody who has no substance.
I believe that you represent the party's values and you move forward, and that's what I have done.
And welcome to Politically Speaking. I'm your host, St. Louis Public Radio's Statehouse and politics reporter, Sarah Kellogg. Joining me in St. Louis, he is St. Louis Public Radio's political correspondent,
Jason Merzenbaum.
And joining us in Platte County, she is the representative for the 14th District in the Missouri House and is the House Minority Leader,
Ashley Aani.
Thank you so much, Representative, for joining us. We're going to get right to it because we have lots of questions. Our first kind of line of questioning is on the special session that concluded just a couple weeks ago. What are your overall thoughts on the special session and how it went?
You know, I think that it can be summed up as sort of a all's well that ends well sort of sentiment, I suppose, you know, just in terms of we got some stuff done, I guess. And that's great. But man, it was a really interesting ride, especially watching what the Senate did and sent over to the House and the final packages we ended up with. But, you know, overall, I am glad that the legislature was able to come together and deliver for St. Louis. That was the biggest concern in most of our minds in terms of in our caucus, certainly going into the special session, is making sure that we got as much as possible for the region, for disaster relief, and then also, you know, tried to do what we could to resurrect some of the funding that died, the appropriations that died at the end of the session in HB 19. And then, you know, hopefully we were able, you know, we were able to keep the Chiefs and the Royals. You know, we put together a package. We did our best there, and we'll see how that goes.
You touched on all the things that we'll get into more in detail, but why do you think the session ended kind of, this special session at least, ended up being fairly drama-free, despite the fact that the Senate, you know, it took some negotiations to get the votes needed to get the bills to the House?
Yeah, you know, I think that at the end of the day, when legislators are tasked with, you know, sending direct relief to folks who need it the most after a disaster, I think that that's the sort of thing that can really bring folks together. I will also say that this extraordinary session was called by the governor. And so when Senate Democrats came back in to negotiate, I do believe that there was a notion that they were negotiating more with the governor's office than they were with Senate Republican leadership. And therefore, there was more trust than would have been there had they just been dealing with Cindy and Tony.
The storm relief package changed pretty dramatically compared to what Kehoe initially proposed. I mean, at first it was a $25 million allotment for temporary housing, not just in St. Louis, but all over the state. And it was a tax deduction for insurance deductibles, not a tax credit. Why do you think that Democrats were able to get so much more compared to what was initially proposed by the governor?
You know, again, I think it goes back to just how badly the governor wanted to keep the Chiefs and the Royals here. Honestly, you know, if you want something done, you know, you're willing to do a lot for that, I think. And I think that the Chiefs and the Royals, you know, as a lifelong Kansas Cityan, I was thrilled to be a part of putting together a package to help keep them here. I know that's a huge priority, but man, he wanted it bad enough. And I think he also realized that $25 million to spread across all these counties was simply not enough. And so that initial offer, while of course, you know, the region's grateful for relief dollars, I think the initial thought was, oh, that's not enough. And immediately Democrats went to work figuring out how we could increase that.
There were also a couple of items from the deceased appropriations bill known as House Bill 19 in the special session package. And that includes $50 million for the Radioisotope Science Center at the University of Missouri Research Reactor and nearly $50 million for a mental health hospital in the KC area. How important was it for a number of your caucus members to include those items in the special session?
Well, those things are incredibly important. We'll start with the research reactor at MU. You know, a lot of folks may not know that some incredibly important and groundbreaking cancer research and treatments are being developed there. And, you know, having been able to tour the reactor myself, that it is an incredible facility doing incredible work. So be able to fund that is huge to make sure that our region can continue being a groundbreaker in terms of scientific research. That's enormous. And Mizzou, it's something that Mizzou can really hold their head up high about, just in terms of something that they can kind of brag on the national stage educationally. And then on the other side of that is we spend so much time in the legislature talking about mental health and how we can address these challenges. And there are so many ways we can do that. But one of the ways is to make sure that folks have a place to go. There are people who are sitting in jails across our state because we do not have any mental health facilities to accept them. And it's unacceptable. So to create some more beds here in Kansas City for folks who need it, that's huge. These are enormous investments in our state and in our people. That I think that most Missourians would agree are really good investments and will return dividends.
Going back to House Bill 19 for a moment, the decision from House Budget Chairman Dirk Deaton not to bring that up for a vote and kill it during the last couple weeks of session was very controversial and caused all sorts of recriminations and heartburn in the Missouri Senate. I think he said, though, during the special session that being more, I guess, picky with how the legislature spends general revenue dollars is the reason why they can allocate $100 million pretty easily to St. Louis storm relief. What do you kind of make of that line of argumentation from Chairman Deaton?
I think it's a little disingenuous. I firmly believe that with the surplus that Missouri has had, that it was no problem to come back and do both things. You know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And I think that, you know, absolutely, it's important to keep a surplus. It's important to keep a quote unquote rainy day fund. So I think that was also some of the frustration when we saw that $25 million price tag on the original offer. We know what our surplus looked like. We know how much money we have in our rainy day fund and how proud they are of touting that rainy day fund. And so I wanted to, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were actually, you know, utilizing those funds when needed. So, I mean, I don't think he's wrong, but I also think that both things can be true.
Going back to the tornado response, I know you're a Kansas City legislator, but I know that a number of people from outside the St. Louis area in the Democratic caucus came to St. Louis after the tornado to help out, including Governor Kehoe, because he was instrumental in making sure that the disaster declaration got to the president's desk relatively quickly. And he also supported a lot of the changes to the special session that we've talked about. Overall, how do you think that the governor has handled the response to the tornado?
So when I was on the ground about a week after the tornado, I spoke with Governor Kehoe from the O'Fallon Park YMCA, where there was a huge outreach operation. And when I shared with him my location, he said, oh, yeah, I grew up about five blocks north of there. So I know that the governor has a lot of, you know, compassion, not only for the area, but he has a lot of lived experience in the area, and he was devastated by what happened as well. So I think that his response was great. I think he's been very hands-on, and I've been very grateful for that response. Also very grateful to our, you know, congressmen and our senators for really pushing this in front of Trump over and over again. I was on the phone with Senator Schmidt's office as well, making sure that we were communicating with the Trump administration and getting this approved as soon as possible.
I want to move on to the other bill that was, I would think, probably the main reason, you know, maybe the reason why lawmakers were called back to Jefferson City, which was the bill that partially pays for new stadiums or stadium improvements for NFL and MLB stadiums. I say that because it's really specifically for the Royals and Chiefs, but it would apply to the Cardinals if they decided to take it up down the line. But as a representative whose district includes part of the Kansas City area, how important was the passage of this package?
The passage of this incentive package was hugely important to the Kansas City area. You know, when I got back from regular session and started making my legislative update tours all around the Northland and Kansas City, all I heard from folks across the city was, are we going to keep the Chiefs and the Royals? How are we keeping the Chiefs and the Royals? What are we doing to make sure that happens? It's top of mind because these teams are you know, part of the DNA of this city. And as a lifelong Kansas Cityan, I can just tell you, there's just, it's hard to put a price tag on just how important these teams are. But we set out to build a package that would make sure that they understood just how important they were and how badly we wanted to keep them here, while also keeping an eye on being responsible to the taxpayers and, you know, we not going overboard in terms of what we offer the teams.
How divided was your House caucus over the incentive packages to keep those teams from bolting to Kansas?
Divided is not really the word I would use to describe it. I think that there was a lot more heartburn over this package after the tornado hit. I think that it was a mild frustration before the tornado hit, just between the regions of the state not necessarily all agreeing on the importance of the issue. But then, you know, after the tornado, it was like, okay, well, we have one priority, and that's helping the folks in St. Louis. And if we can do something else, great. So yeah, divided. I wouldn't say we were divided. I would just say that, you know, we kind of came down on different reasons to be for or against the bill. And I'm really proud of the way that we showed up. I mean, at the end of the day, House Democrats were the adults in the room. We could have shown up to special session and yelled and screamed and said, you know, we're not getting everything we want. No, thank you. And we didn't. We came and we did work and we got some stuff passed. And I'm proud of what we did.
You know, sadly, Missouri has a history of losing NFL teams, especially on the St. Louis side, most recently the Rams. Do you think that the Rams situation is possibly a cautionary tale about why the state shouldn't subsidize sports stadiums?
I think that the Rams is a cautionary tale about why we should not be trying to lose a major sports team in this state. You know, I think that when we look at what happens to a region when we lose such a huge presence like the Rams, you know, if we were to lose the Chiefs and the Royals here in Kansas City, man, that would really, I think, depress parts of our city. I don't want to see that here in Kansas City, and I certainly don't want to be part of a legislature that loses the Chiefs and the Royals.
So to get into like the specifics of the legislation itself, what does this do regarding paying for stadiums, and why do you think this model was necessary?
So this is an economic development package that I think works because it essentially reinvests the tax revenue from the stadiums back into the stadiums so that any incentive dollars going towards the Chiefs and the Royals, it's not coming from general revenue. It's coming directly from the tax revenues that were created from their existing business. And I think that reinvesting dollars back into our sports teams makes a whole lot of sense. And it also ensures that you know, someone from the boot heel who's never attended a Chiefs game in their life is not paying into that. It's only folks who are spending money at the stadiums. And I think that that's important as well, that folks who support the teams are the ones who are reinvesting in their future.
Why can't the owners of the Royals and the Chiefs just pay for these stadiums themselves?
It's an excellent question. You know, I think that part of the challenge that we are in is that we are inside of a system where governments across the country are subsidizing these stadiums for owners. So if it's not us, it will be somebody else. And in this case, it will be Kansas, or it could be Nashville with the Royals, or Omaha. There are other markets that are looking at these teams. And frankly, I think that it's incumbent upon Missouri to take the most responsible path to keeping these teams. And I think that that's what we did.
I think the biggest difference between the Rams situation and this one is the Rams were jettisoned to Inglewood, California, which is well outside the St. Louis media market. I don't know how many miles away that the proposed Chiefs and Royals stadiums in Kansas would be, but from the outside looking in, it doesn't really seem like it would be that far. What is the argument to the rest of the state that we should be foregoing a lot of these tax monies to prevent teams from moving like 10 or 15 miles across the border, and they're still going to be in the general Kansas City media market?
Sure. Yeah. Media market, absolutely. They'll still be around if they stay in Kansas. However, the tax revenue dollars, the money we get from these stadiums and these teams, not only at the stadiums, not only at the games, but just in terms of all of the business that crops up around it. You know, I was in a store last week, Made in KC, here in the Kansas City Northland, and you know, they have tons of local artists who create Chiefs and Royals stuff. It's all, you know, totally custom. And these are folks who would be out of a job if they, you know, these teams were moving somewhere else. And sure, some of them could move across the state line, and some of them could continue creating across the state line. But, you know, these Made in KC stores, those are going to end up in Kansas. You know, they're not going to be here in Missouri any longer. And I think those are the things that we don't think about. All of the revenue, all of the activity, all of the dollars spent at Missouri restaurants and bars and gas stations on the way to and from games. You know, these are dollars that we want kept here in Missouri. And if we let that go to Kansas, then we lose so much more than just what we're investing into these teams.
So this legislation also requires buy-in from local communities. Now, that could be Jackson County, that could be Clay County, but, you know, that could look at, you know, that could be a tax. And you know, only last year did Jackson County residents vote no on such a tax. And so I guess my question is kind of, what does that hurdle look like? And to bring up the point, it would affect, you know, Kansas City areas, people who maybe don't go to Chiefs games. Kind of how do you justify that?
Absolutely. So first of all, the thing that I think is mostly frustrating to me about the tax that was rejected by Jackson County voters last year is that it was simply asking Jackson County voters to renew a tax that they had been under for years and years and years. And the biggest issue with that vote isn't that they didn't want to keep the teams, didn't want to invest in the teams. The biggest issue is that the proposal was poorly thought out, poorly communicated, and it came right after an enormous property tax assessment had just been sort of issued for the entire county. And so folks were already reeling from their property tax assessments. They were frustrated by the lack of information about the plan, and they voted accordingly. And I just don't really believe that vote indicates exactly how folks in the area feel about keeping these teams. So, you know, I think that when we look at maybe Jackson County proposing this again, or even Clay County proposing something, My hope is that we have a clear plan. It's well communicated to voters and people really understand the community benefits of having these teams around. And that includes everything from tax revenues to investments from the teams and the players. And, you know, there's so many community benefits that, again, I just hope that that campaign clearly articulates it much better than the last one in Jackson County.
So we are speaking on June 30th, which is literally the day of the deadline for the Kansas deal, which would pay for 70% of stadium construction costs. What's next?
Well, I guess we wait to see if Kansas decides to extend their deal. If I had to guess, they will, because nothing's happened and they've been asked to extend it, even though they've said they won't. And I suppose we'll see. You know, I wish that wasn't the case. I really do wish that this, you know, self-imposed deadline was being kept and that we could just all move forward and determine what's next. But I'm not sure. I guess we just wait and see.
Yeah, you're mentioning the fact that the Chiefs president, Mark Donovan, has asked for an extension of the deadline from Kansas. What are your thoughts on that request?
Yeah, that was frustrating to see, if I'm being honest. You know, I think that the state of Missouri has been over backwards to do what we need to do to keep these teams, to work directly with them, to communicate with them as openly as possible. And, you know, for them to continue to be hedging with Kansas as an option, you know, that's frustrating. And I really just wish that the Chiefs and the Royals would make a decision, stay here in Missouri, and let's move on and keep going.
We need to take a quick break, but we'll be right back.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And we're back on Politically Speaking. Our guest today is House Minority Leader Ashley Aune, whose district includes parts of the Kansas City area. So let's go into kind of some 2026 issues or just issues that are in the future. What do you think will be front and center next year?
I just think that in terms of what we're going to see next year, it's a little up in the air right now, if I'm being honest. I think that it's an election year, right? So, but they already got abortion off of their plate this year. They passed their abortion ban that will go on the ballot next year at some point. So that's off the plate. They took away workers' rights by stripping the provisions of Proposition A. And, you know, so what will they be looking towards? Well, I think that they're going to be bringing up some of the most divisive issues in our state. I think trans folks are going to be top of mind. I think anything that they can do to, you know, further marginalize an already very marginalized community, that's going to happen. I think we're going to be talking probably more about immigration. That's a wedge issue, of course. Really anything that the Republican supermajority can bring up to divide Missourians, that is going to be their priority in the legislature.
This is probably a weird question, but do you think the fact that Kehoe got a lot of his campaign agenda finished in his first year in office could actually be a negative for him because there's just not as much to accomplish next year and in subsequent years?
Yeah, I think that it absolutely could be. You know, I think that it's frustrating to see how effective this Republican administration was this session. It's certainly the most effective I've ever seen the Republican administration be in a legislative session. And so, yeah, I think it could hurt him politically, but I would guess that he's just going to come up with some other big ticket items to talk about and campaign on and work towards, I suppose. We'll see.
Well, there are a couple of longer term things that he talked about in his State of the State speech that I don't think are going to be like first or second year items. They may be year three, year four. If he wins a second term, year five, six, seven. That's eliminating the state income tax and rewriting the foundation formula, which both are, even admitted to us, are very controversial ideas that could be very consequential, even if they're done with the best intentions. Is that something you're expecting next year, or is that just you do expect that to be remain in like the blue ribbon commission silo until they come up with a definitive plan?
I'm guessing that it will be more longer term, but you really never know. I mean, you know, I was shocked by what we saw with property taxes during this special session, and it does worry me about what the future conversation is going to be about taxes in this state. I hear so often Republicans talk about how we need to eliminate taxes and eliminate taxes. And I just wonder, how do we pay for our society if we are eliminating all these taxes? We're trying to eliminate property taxes essentially in Republican counties. And then you want to eliminate income tax. What is our sales tax going to look like at that point, right? I mean, we have to find these revenues somewhere. And I'm not sure. I'm guessing it'll be a longer plan, a longer term plan.
We're recording this on June 30th, so it's possible that the so-called one big beautiful bill will have either passed or they'll go back to the drawing board. But one provision in that the Missouri Hospital Association is paying very close attention to is efforts to either bar states like Missouri from being able to raise their medical provider tax, which in Mo Legg's speech is the FRA, are to cap it at 3.5% by 2032. The Missouri Hospital Association is extremely alarmed about the capping at 3.5% just because it's been as high as around 6%. Is that somebody, I don't know how often you talk with your Republican colleagues, but are they paying attention to it? Even though, like, they may not be in Missouri politics by 2032?
You know, these are questions that I ask my Republican colleagues from time to time. Are you paying attention to what's going on in D.C.? Have you heard this? Do you know how that's going to affect y'all? Do you know how that's going to affect us? You know, honestly, the answer is, yeah, but we're not that worried about it, I think, usually. I honestly feel like so many folks on the other side of the aisle don't really believe it until it's actually happened. And I think that that's a fair way to approach the Trump administration because there's a lot of bloviating and you never really know what's going to happen until it actually happens. And then sometimes it's reversed. You know, with this bill, yeah, I think that folks are paying attention, but I'm not sure that they're worried enough for their own communities. I'm not sure that they're worried enough for their rural hospitals and the effects it's going to have on their healthcare systems and the care that their constituents receive. You know, unfortunately, I think that this could be one of those things that folks don't really understand how bad it is until it's implemented and it affects them.
Let's talk about the two voter-approved initiatives that Republicans either repealed or are trying to repeal. The first is a measure that would repeal what's known as Amendment 3, which placed abortion rights protections in the Missouri Constitution in 2024. Republicans want to replace it with what I would classify as a near total ban with some limited exceptions. There would be exceptions for rape or incest up to 12 weeks of pregnancy. And I think it expands the life of the mother exception to fetal abnormalities, which was not in the abortion ban that passed in 2019. I wasn't at the House press conference, but you seem pretty confident that Missouri voters would reject this. Why do you feel like this is going to be dead on arrival when it goes up for a vote either in August or November of next year?
Well, I believe that Missouri voters know exactly what they were voting for in November of last year when they said that they want access to reproductive care here in Missouri, including abortion. What the language that the Republicans passed does is, like you said, it creates a near abortion ban in this state. And that is simply unacceptable. That's not what Missourians said we wanted last November. So I think that we now have, because they decided to get this done in the 2025 session, that gives us a very long runway to build a campaign against this abortion ban. we can. I know that there are organizations that are already organizing to make sure that we are fighting back. And so we plan on educating voters and making sure folks understand exactly what this language does, that this is a ban, that this is incredibly restrictive, and that frankly, it's disingenuous because it's utilizing it's fear mongering. It's using transphobia to push an anti-abortion agenda, and I think that that is something that Missouri voters will once again see through and reject.
And you're referring to the fact that it also includes language that would bar the legislature from repealing the ban on most gender-affirming care for minors. Just want to make sure that's what you're referring to.
Yes, that's right.
On the paid sick leave that was repealed, has there been any serious conversations about placing a constitutional amendment up to voters to require paid sick leave? And I'll ask the same question I asked Senate Minority Leader Doug Beck. Is there any thought about including other things in there? Like, let's just say, state government must recognize public employee unions. Our right to work is banned forever and the legislature can never pass it. Like, what are the thoughts on that provision that was repealed by the legislature?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of frustration around it, of course. And there are a whole lot of conversations happening about how do we fight back? Do we create an initiative petition that would guarantee paid sick leave in the Constitution? That's exactly what we told the Republicans that they were doing when they repealed this, is we said, okay, well, you are ensuring that this gets enshrined in our Constitution in a few years because the voters are coming back to do exactly that. So yeah, there are conversations about that. There are conversations about what else we could do to ensure worker protections on a constitutional level. And again, we warned Republicans, if they mess with with Proposition A, we are going to put it in the Constitution. And I am certain that there are efforts underway to do just that.
So in 2024, Missouri House Democrats flipped a seat but lost a seat, so pretty much leaving the numbers in the House the same. And if I remember correctly, Democrats in the House only need to flip 3 seats. Is that correct?
That's correct.
To break the supermajority. Let me be clear on that. To break the supermajority. How doable do you think this is for 2026?
Oh, it's going to happen. I am more confident about flipping seats in 2026 than I have ever been. The last similar midterm cycle that we can compare it to was 2018. We flipped seats then. I intend on flipping even more seats this cycle. We have a ton of opportunity. There are seats that Democrats lost by just a few hundred votes last year, and that's where we are going to start, but that's not where we're going to end. We are focusing a lot of our effort on our purple districts and districts where Republican representatives have been focused on just completely voting against the will of their constituents and misrepresenting what their constituents set them down to Jefferson City to do on their behalf.
What areas kind of are you looking for as far as pickups?
There are areas all over the state where we have opportunity, whether it is in St. Louis County, St. Charles, Clay County, Platte County, Greene County. There are districts all over where we see opportunity, and we are building a really robust effort here with the House Democrats. And I know the Senate Democrats are doing the same to make sure that each one of these districts gets the exact attention they need, that we're running the right folks in these districts, and that we are messaging to voters exactly what it is that Missouri Democrats are doing for them.
Two members of your caucus, Representatives Betsy Fogel and Kerry Engel, are running for state Senate seats. You know, what are your thoughts on their campaigns?
I could not be more excited for my friends, Betsy Fogel and Kerry Engel, to flip some Senate seats next year. Betsy is running down in Greene County, and she is really well positioned to flip that seat from red to blue. Not only does she have an incredible team behind her, but I can't think of a better candidate for Southwest Missouri, for that region. She is Springfield through and through. And I really can't wait to see what she does there. And Carrie Engel in Eastern Jackson County, you know, she is, again, very well poised to flip a seat. It is so close to flipping blue. And she flipped a seat in 2018. Like I said, that's the exact person I point to. In 2018, when there was a backlash to Trump, Carrie Engel flipped her House seat, and she's going to do it again in this backlash election. She's going to flip a Senate seat, and we're going to bring a little bit more balance to the Missouri Senate. And I'm very grateful to those two women for the work they're doing to make that happen.
So our last guest on the show was Senate Minority Leader Doug Beck. And Jason, if I remember right, he seemed pretty confident about flipping the Springfield seat, which is Representative Fogel's running for. And he felt, you know, that was a pretty confident one. And he said he felt pretty good also about the Representative Engel's seat, which is, again, the Lee's Summit area, Kansas City area. And so I guess my question for you, Ashleyani, is there's another seat that is likely to be possibly competitive, which is Senator Tony Lukedemeyer's seat. I know there isn't a candidate yet there, but what are your kind of thoughts on that particular race?
Well, Sarah, I'm not going to be breaking any news to y'all today. I will not be running in that Senate seat. We are still looking for a candidate there. But, you know, my priority is to flip seats in the House. I ran for minority leader to do just that. And that is what I am singularly focused on in 2026. But I am helping, you know, keep an eye out for the best candidate to run in the Senate district. And whoever that ends up being, I will do my damnedest to help them win that election.
Well, we can't get anything past you, because let me tell you what my next question was. I don't need to. And that's all the questions we have for you, Representative. Thank you so much for joining us today. Politically Speaking is a product of St. Louis Public Radio, which is a part of the University of Missouri St. Louis. You can find all of our work, political and not, at stlpr.org. And Representative Ani, where can people find you on the internet where you want to be found?
You can find me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, Ashley for Missouri or Ashley for Mo, and I'd love to see you there.
All right. Well, thank you so much, and until next time, so long.
Politically Speaking is produced by Jason Rosenbaum, Rachel Lippman, and me, Sarah Kellogg. The show is edited by Fred Ehrlich. Read all of our coverage at stlpr.org. And if you haven't already, make sure to subscribe to Politically Speaking by searching the term Politically Speaking on Apple Podcasts.